That's okay.
We're checking the Marianne ZBAs. We're checking all of her texts to you.
Me? Oh.
To your personal accounts.
Okay. Yes. I might take those last. Okay, so what we're going to do is take testimony on the packages that we just considered to try to keep this coherent for both the council and for those that are here to speak and for anybody that's following this complicated process. So we're going to take testimony on the first package, which are amendments 7 through 11.
And I have two people off the list who signed up for those, Roger Leachman and Bob Solinger.
Okay, come on up.
And Bob, you can never claim again in the future that you weren't bumped to the head of the line.
The first for everything.
Bob, you're representing an organization.
I just want to say before you start, I did not sign up for 7. I signed up for the amendments that Ms. Fritz put up regarding Goose Hollow, which got turned down.
Okay, thank you. So, Bob, you're here representing an organization. If you need a little extra time, we'll provide that. So, go ahead.
No, actually, I'll be very brief today. My name is Bob Solinger. I'm here representing the Audubon Society of Portland. I'll just say, first of all, from a habitat perspective, wildlife perspective, I think this plan has come an incredible distance since it was first presented to the Planning Commission. Staff and Planning Commission and Council, I think, have done a really good job of filling in the blanks on the environment that were there. So we're very pleased with where this has gone. We support Amendments 7 through 11, and I think it's very exciting that we're talking about some front-loaded actions on the river, especially Commissioner Fritz. We really appreciate your work in this area. So we support all of these. We think the combination of the staff recommendations and Commissioner Fritz's recommendations are good here, and I encourage you to support them. So.
But just to clarify, you support the staff amendments to my amendments?
As far as yes, I think to me they seemed non-controversial. The intent is still there as far as I read them. Would you agree with that on these? Do you see any conflict?
I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, no, I think they're fine. On number 7, we'd like to see the 5 sites actually listed as part of the policy as well, but those are minor quibbles. So I think what's here is sufficient, and we'll really move us forward. So
thank you very much. Appreciate your help on developing those ideas too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else would like to speak on items 7 through 11? In which case, let's move on to the second package, which is 18, 22, 24, and 57.
Okay, the first three names I have are Peter Wilcox, Chris Jaworski, and Willie Levinson.
How many on this package
do you have? I have two more after these gentlemen.
Okay.
Afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Thank you, commissioners. Good to be here.
Peter, put your name in the record.
Peter Wilcox. I live in Northeast Portland. I'm also representing the Portland Waterfront Alliance, which is a ad hoc group of boat builders, boat owners, historic vessel owners, captains, including the Oregon Maritime Museum, that has been working on co-creating a different vision for the waterfront that we'll be unveiling fairly soon. And we feel like the Waterfront Master Plan needs to be updated in order to really take into account what's happening with the public market, and also with the proposal that we'll be bringing forward and others. And I think it goes well with some of the other proposals, the dock proposals, for example, that I know we're not discussing. So I know you've talked about the master plan already. I think there's just really good reasons to update that, at least the parts that relate to the area around the Morrison Bridge and where the public market's going to be. And the park's been so underutilized for so long. We need to do more. So,
thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Chris Jaworski. I erroneously prepared 3 minutes, so perhaps I can borrow a minute from you,
okay,
sir.
Okay, go ahead. We'll try.
Thank you. As a community action member of Portland's destination marketing organization, Travel Portland, I'm very interested in the region's planning and redevelopment goals especially those elements that impact the visitor experience. My involvement stems from my previous roles as general manager of Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, as a participant in the Downtown Retail Council, and a consultant to the tourism industry. Prior to that, my graduate student work in sustainable tourism development provided me with numerous opportunities to work on projects that contributed not only to our great city, but also to our state and other destinations around the world. Representatives of the tourism industry and members of the CAC are often receive proposals for interest in development of areas such as Waterfront Park. That's why I'm here today, to share an item of concern with certain proposed amendments to the West Quadrant Plan, which are vital to tourism, retail, and entertainment. We are supportive of much of the plan, however, are concerned about amendment items number 18 related to changing the timeline from 2 to 5 years to 6 to 20. That together would delay opportunities to, one, enhance Portland's attractiveness as a premier destination for visitors and residents alike, revitalize and improve access of Waterfront Park as one of our most vital but underdeveloped attractions. Waterfront Park and Willamette River represent signature opportunities for economic development, recreation, and human access, which you have all listed here today. It creates public-private management approaches with Waterfront Park similar to the model of the Holiday Park Partnership in the Lloyd District, and it expands commercial options on the waterfront that may include water transit, docking, and other retail options. One of the benefits of the tourism industry is its ability to bring in outside dollars to stimulate our local economy. In 2014, the tourism industry brought in $4.6 in direct spending and supported roughly 34,000 jobs for the greater Portland region. Waterfront Park is our signature space in Portland. The importance of this cannot be overstated as Portland continues to set the pace in urban living and green development. It's of critical importance that the original timeline associated with items 18 and 23 in this plan are maintained in order to link new concepts with existing catalyst projects such as the James Beard Public Market and to maximize community access, employment, and economic benefits possible for Waterfront Park. Now, I'd like you for just a moment to imagine Pioneer Courthouse Square, still a surface parking lot. Or I'd like you to imagine Seattle without Pike's Place Market. Or perhaps most impactful, imagine the city of Vancouver, BC, and if it had not committed in its entirety to Stanley Park, which, by the way, was recognized by TripAdvisor's Traveler's Choice 2014 award as the number one urban park in the world. And, of course, we all use TripAdvisor, so we can trust its source. Comparing with great places such as Central Park in New York, Millennium Park in Chicago, Golden Gate Park in San Francisco, and even places like St. James Park in London, among others, is impressive. As such, I would urge you to please consider maintaining the timelines associated with items 18 and also 23 in the Waterfront Master Plan. Thank you for the opportunity to provide input and for your consideration with regard to these proposed amendments.
Thank you. Great. Thanks very much. Mm-hmm. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Willie Levinson, Human Access Project. Wanted to say first, it was great working with the BPS staff. It was actually pretty cool as first time Human Access Project has done direct advocacy to see that the plan was moved a little bit in terms of human access. This wasn't discussed. It was points 2 through 6, but it was really important changes to the plan. So hoping parks we'd consider was interesting dialogue between the mayor and Commissioner Fritz regarding the master plan. It's hard. I mean, on the one hand, it would be great any money put towards creating better access to the land, a better relationship to the land is great. On the other hand, there is a plan that's there and ready to use. And I would say that Human Access Project currently is working with the Parks Bureau to put in a plan to do humane geese mitigation. Tom McCall Bowl or Audubon's a consultant to try to increase activity because a lot of people don't like using the bowl because each goose poos 2 to 3 pounds a day. That alone will be something that might increase people's interest in using the bowl. I hate to say, I'd really like to touch on point 17 really quickly. There's a lot that was done with Habitat, and it was really cool that over half of these amendments have to do with the Willamette River, which is also very encouraging. But I am concerned about water access, human access, and how that's going to be measurable because it's kind of ambiguous. It's kind of thrown out there that we want it. I think Habitat side did a really good job of saying we want X number of linear feet of habitat restoration. At this point, it's probably hard to do that, but I'd suggest with number 17,
Oh, is, that one really isn't before us. We've already done that one. Oh, no, I'm sorry, it is. It's in the consent package.
Yeah, every neighborhood deserves access to the Willamette, and that could be an opportunity in 17 to say, you know, along with all these other things, that there should be access to the Willamette in every neighborhood. That's a decent aspiration. And just finally, in closing,
okay, but I think, sorry to interrupt you, but I think it says that for each of the 7 West Quadrant districts, right? So, again, remember this is just the West Quadrant plan. We can't.
Oh yeah, it does. But I didn't see exactly in that. Maybe I misread it, but I didn't see where it says access to the water. It talks about a bunch of different things,
okay,
but it does not specifically say that each part of this neighborhood, that each quadrant should have. Wouldn't that be great? What kind of a city is that? A city where each neighborhood you can walk directly to the Willamette. That's a reasonable aspiration.
Okay.
But in closing, sorry, I'm going long.
Sorry, go ahead. I interrupted.
Is the city of Portland really, in terms of the Willamette, I mean, every Northwest city has great access to the water. Vancouver, Victoria, Seattle, Boise, Spokane, along the Willamette, Eugene, Corvallis, Independence. Oregon City is putting a lot of money right now into doing their redevelopment of the Willamette River. Milwaukee just put in a brand new waterfront park. And now Vancouver, who a lot of times Portland loves to turn their nose up to as being behind us in Hicks, they are getting to redevelop their waterfront park. I just want to say that, I mean, this is a huge deal. I know sometimes the Superfund site might intimidate people from starting this work on the Willamette because we've talked and talked and talked about doing things. We've started a great foundation talking about creating a better relationship with the Willamette River. So what can we do to start? And the fact is the Superfund site is a big deal, and I'm not going to apologize for it, but the more we can get people connected to the Willamette, the easier they will have swallowing the big bill that will come with cleaning up the Willamette because people are disconnected. So I would just encourage the council to consider small, easy ways that we can just start implementing some of these things. And Human Access Project is very excited about the idea of fundraising to do these things. So
thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, next, please.
The last two on these items are Andrew Yaden and Jason Franklin.
Good afternoon.
Thank you for your time, and again, thank you for your service to this great city. My name is Andrew Yaden. I'd like to speak briefly about some of these waterfront issues. A year ago, I had the great pleasure of leading a team of 6 graduate planning students from Portland State in developing a set of strategies to activate Tom McCall Waterfront Park, really as a regional and as a year-round amenity. And during a 6-month period, we collected over 900 public comments and spoke to 100 different stakeholders, and we learned a couple of really key points, and they've actually been discussed a little bit today. First, Waterfront Park is not a downtown park. It is a regional park. If Pioneer Square is our living room, then Waterfront Park is our front yard. It's where people come together from all over the world. It's really the face that Portland puts on for the rest of the world to see. Excuse me. Secondly, there's a real desire for change and a momentum for change, for something to happen in the park. Mostly people just want better access both to the park and to the river, and they want something to do. My very first trip, site visit to the park, a couple from Seattle stopped me and said, "Now that we're here, what do we do?" So I want to speak to the planning process, the master planning process for Waterfront Park. I really believe it should be in that 2 to 5 year range, especially for some of the reasons that have already been talked about. It's really imperative that this happens now, or at least soon, to make sure that we can coordinate this planning process with some of the other great and exciting things that are already happening in the city, with the South Waterfront, with the James Beard Public Market coming. Sorry, I'm going over my time.
There you go.
And then I just also want to express a little bit of disappointment that there was no discussion around proposed Amendment 23. I know it's not up right now, but that's about exploring management opportunities for Waterfront Park. And since a lot of discussion today revolved around a lack of funding or a lack of resources, this was something that we had recommended to the city and to BPS as an option to circumvent those lack of funding.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, anyone else want to testify on this group of amendments, proposed amendments? All right, then let's take testimony on the third tier, which is number 43.
Okay, I show 8 people signed up for this. The first 3 are Robert Wright, Deanne Mullen Crispin, and Cal Toth.
Excuse me. Come on up. Good afternoon. Go ahead. Just pull that microphone a little closer. It'll turn. There you go.
Okay, how's that?
Yes.
I'm Deanna Mueller Crispin, a West End resident. And excuse me if I'm a little scattered because I had comments at, which are written and you will see, I believe, later on some of the other amendments. But and I believe you packaged 42 with 43 because I have comments on both.
Is that right? I think we're working only on 43 at this point.
42 we agreed to. So 43 is the
one. Yeah, so they're both before us.
Okay. I strongly support Commissioner Fritz's amendment for zoning tools to allow to allow height increases other than on the waterfront, only for preservation of historic properties and affordable housing. And I believe Mayor Hale's Amendment A also addresses that. Two comments. This restriction of FAR transfers should be extended to the West End and Goose Hollow, because it would be a very good thing to be more than just in the Pearl. And secondly, it's very important to specifically not allow TDR bonuses to be used next to or really even in the same block as historic buildings, because otherwise their historic value may be defeated easily. Number 43. I support Commissioner Fritz's amendment to not allow 250 height limits in the Pearl waterfront. We just heard about how important Waterfront Park was. Our waterfront is precious and should not be shrouded by 250-foot buildings. Greenway enhancements will not compensate for shadows created by 250-foot buildings. As a note, San Francisco has had 60-foot height limits on its waterfront since the 1970s. And a recent citizen initiative petition in 2013 confirmed that 60-foot limit at the waterfront and required voter approval for any future construction projects on the waterfront that exceeded the existing height limits. So I think we should follow them. And the 60-foot height limit there was adopted after it was proved by geometry that the best location for high-rise buildings are linear and serpentine, curved in mid-city lines along mass transit. This also produces the best views and hence best prices for new high-rise condos and minimizes their shade impact to public streets and parks and preserves most historic neighborhoods in San Francisco. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Welcome.
My name is Robert Wright. I live in the West End. I commend Commissioner Fritz for taking the initiative with proposed Amendment 43 regarding removal of the height business overlay from properties within the Northwest 13th Avenue Historic District and establish a 100-foot height limit for that historic district. Certainly, this district is part of the historic fabric of Portland and must not be overshadowed or crowded out by tall buildings. The West End of Portland and its buildings are equally historic. This has been very well documented. Yet the basic plan and the proposed amendments do not address maximum height in relation to the many historic buildings in the West End and the neighboring Goose Hollow District. This is absolutely paramount to the future of these districts. Having lived in Portland and knowing its history, the West End and now the Pearl District grew in parallel. People that lived in the West End worked over what is now in the Pearl District. So they're twinned, basically. They're not opposing each other. They grew together. And one editorial comment: in the documents from Bureau staffs, rationale has been misused. Rationale, by definition, is a logical basis for a course of action. Recommendations from staff or committees are not rational. They are reasons. The basic rationale for allowing buildings above 100 feet must be documented clearly and articulated clearly and publicly discussed. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Cal Toth, and I live in Goose Hollow. I'm a member of the GHFL board. I'm also an ordinary member of the Friends of Goose Hollow. I've been asked by the Friends of Goose Hollow president to say a few words from Friends of Goose Hollow's point of view, and I'm also expressing a few of my opinions. I'm very concerned about the height limits, bonus provisions, and bonus transfer system supported by the current draft plan. In many respects, I think many of these problems continue, especially as it relates to Goose Hollow, particularly the 25 block area east of Providence Park and a few blocks immediately west of the stadium, which were talked about earlier today. Friends of Goose Hollow strongly supports Commissioner Amendments, Commissioner Fritz's Amendments 42 and 43, removing height bonuses over certain historic neighboring areas in the Pearl, only allowing height increases above existing levels for historic preservation and affordable housing. So we agree with this, but we'd like to see a similar amendment for Goose Hollow, which does not currently exist in the draft. Friends of Goose Hollow supported the removal of height bonuses in Goose Hollow, consistent with 80% of the GHFL members at the February 11th meeting, special meeting. We voted for height bonuses to be removed in Goose Hollow. If the council decides not to remove all height bonuses, Friends of Goose Hollow requests City Council to at least allow height increase bonuses only for historic preservation and for affordable housing. I'd like to add, Friends of Goose Hollow strongly supports Commissioner Fritz's proposed amendments 45 and 46, keeping the residential overlay in the areas east and west of Providence Park. I know you don't want to speak about that right at the moment. We believe not supporting this amendment violates the comprehensive plan, as you mentioned, and the policy of no net loss of housing. It should be looked at, and lawyers should be looking at that. The BDS claim that CX will promote residential housing in Goose Hollow is highly speculative.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Okay, next.
Are Tracy Prince, Mark Velke, and Burton Francis?
Hi, I'm Tracy Prince. I came here to testify on 45 and 46. I'm as disappointed as it seems like Commissioner Fritz is. It's very, very upsetting to know that a lot of people came here, a lot of people had researched this and have a lot to say.
All right, and we want you to testify on the ones that are still in front of us.
I agree. Yes. I'm going to be testifying on number 43, but I want to point out that you've created a giant conundrum by not opening up 45 and 46, because the GHFL board approved and voted to support changing the zoning on the west side of the stadium to CX, but we only did that because it had a residential overlay. We would not support CX that does not have a residential overlay in that area. So the last go-round when I appeared in front of you and testified, I said we support that, but we don't support it without residential overlay. So now we got to go back to RH because we don't support a CX in that spot. There was no indication that that's what we stood for. So I just want you to consider if there's a way to deal with that issue, because we did not come before you last time and say we want CX with no residential. On 43, I wholeheartedly support Commissioner Fritz's call for removing bonuses from the Pearl's historic district and lowering height limits to 100, or keeping height limits at 100, and only allowing height increases for historic preservation transfers and affordable housing. These are great ideas and creative ways to preserve our incredible historic architecture. I was disappointed to see no similar protection of historic buildings in Goose Hollow or the West End. My personal opinion is to support removing bonuses in Goose Hollow, as the GHFL membership vote of 80% wanted bonuses removed. However, if bonuses are not removed, then it seems like a smart idea to allow height increases only through historic preservation and affordable housing bonuses. Finally, I want to say that I feel like our view corridors weren't protected well enough, and I'd like to see some more specific language about protecting the view from the Vista Bridge in Washington Park. And lastly, the map still does not show the current base heights, still seems to be showing bonuses as a right when they are not. If the Planning Bureau does not plan to deregulate bonuses and does not plan to treat bonuses as a giveaway, then this should be clearly stated in the West Quadrant Plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Mayor and commissioners, my name is Mark Velke. I'm on the board of the Goose Hollow Foothills League, but I'm only speaking for myself today. I want to thank Commissioner Fritz for her suggestion in Amendments 42 and 43 that the Pearl receive increased heights only for historic preservation and affordable housing, and bonuses are removed in some areas. I support removing Goose Hollow's bonuses, just like 80% of the voters in the Goose Hollow Foothills League, but if that's not possible, then I encourage you to extend the idea from the Pearl to Goose Hollow, since we desperately need protection for our historic architecture. And then I'd also personally like to thank Commissioner Fritz for trying to get the Goose Hollow issues addressed today. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Burton Francis for Preserve the Pearl LLC. First of all, I don't want to sound like a broken record and jump on the Commissioner Fritz fan club, but 39. Yes,
go ahead. She likes it.
39, preserving step down to the Willamette and to the extent that you're removing bonuses only for preservation and affordable housing is outstanding, and we're very supportive of that. To the extent that this proposal seems to increase the height limit in the historic district, I'm looking at the map at the very end of this long sheet here. The map says 75 feet in the historic district, as I see it right here. The proposal is for a 100-foot height limit, and we're opposed to increasing any of the height limits in this particular area. So I'd like to point that out. And then finally, my last comment goes to the failure to address basically the height limits in general in this area. And also noting, because I was confused by this language that was from the staff about only discussing the South Pearl. I mean, I didn't understand what that meant. What is that concept? And I went back to page 171 of this big fat booklet that we got here. All right. And as late as December of 2014, the map that's shown at page 171 still distinguishes between North Pearl, which is north of Lovejoy, a Middle Pearl area between Lovejoy and Hoyt, and which is distinguished on that map at 150 feet, and then south of Hoyt to Burnside, which is 175 feet. And I'm looking at the map now in this big handout, okay? And I guess what they mean by South Pearl is everything south of Lovejoy now, because that Middle Pearl area no longer is reflected in this map. And I'm wondering why the amendments haven't addressed that. And my comment basically is, to the extent that this is wiping out our neighborhood, which is the Middle Pearl, from Lovejoy to Hoyt, we strongly object to the failure to address that as being inconsistent with the Central City Fundamental Design Guidelines, the River District Guidelines, in terms of cherishing the uniqueness and inhabitability of neighborhoods.
Okay, we'll get clarification on that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much. Next folks on this.
43, the last two I show are Seth Johnson and Roger Leachman.
Okay, come on up. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. My name is Seth Johnson. I'm with Preserve the Pearl, and I just wanted to echo that I support lower height limits within the Pearl. I am baffled as to how we preserve the historic district with a 250-foot height limit. I believe that the comments about San Francisco are very important. I think we can look at numerous of the cities. The gentleman earlier spoke about parks, St. James Park, and all these areas, London and Paris. He didn't mention Paris, but these are all areas that have low-rise buildings. And in terms of the Bay Area is a fantastic example, along with London and Paris, of how people considered themselves the stewards of the city. And so legislation that's been passed in those cities has helped preserve those cities for a long time. There are numerous areas in the Bay Area that would have been developed had it not been for the thoughtful conscience of the people in the past. I think it's very important that we think of these things now. I fail to understand what the hurry is to radically change the character of this area and the character that has brought people to Portland. What's about to happen is going to drive people out. There is already a somewhat of a mass defection taking place in some cases, and so how can people in the future invest in this area and know that it's going that their investment's going to be respected? So I encourage a more thoughtful response to what's going on here, and I think we'll all do better if we slow down. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Afternoon.
Hi, my name is Roger Leachman. I'm a member of the Board of Directors of the Goose Hollow Foothills League. Amendment 43 for the Pearl would only allow height increases for historic preservation and affordable housing. I support that for them, because we would want that at least for Goose Hollow. The Bureau opposes this. The SAC, the Stakeholders Advisory Committee, also opposes this. Well, of course they would. After all, the Bureau chose the SAC. At the last GHFL meeting, one of those various members of the Stakeholders Advisory Committee, not a Goose Hollow resident, said, "I don't know who we will recuperate our reduced land values from if you lower height limits or remove bonuses. I don't know if it would be this GHFL board or city council." Well, you can hear the threat as well as anyone. This is what we have always dealt with in Goose Hollow. This was who was put on the SAC, whose co-chairs were both developers and whose members were chosen by the Bureau without any regard for neighborhood residency or even Portland residency. The downtown representative said conspiratorially to West Enders, "Don't tell anyone, but I don't live in Portland." Well, when you choose your own electorate, you get the results you intend. I'm from the South originally, so I know all about this. And Portland, it turns out, is no different. I think that little can surprise me anymore. I live in a city where it is the official policy of city government, acting without any legal basis through the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, to restrict and neuter the exercise of democracy in Portland's neighborhood associations, which they were founded to support. So why should the Bureau's fictions and the SAC's conflicts of interest be any more surprising? I urge a vote for this amendment.
Thank you. Okay, anyone else want to testify on those amendments? And then, does anyone want to testify on any of the ones we adopted by consent that we haven't otherwise heard testimony on? Come on up, please. I should say adopted. Put on the table. I keep getting my nomenclature confused.
Hello. My name's Mary Vogel. I live in the West End and on the Land Use and Transportation Committee for the Downtown Neighborhood Association, but I'm testifying only for myself and my business plan, Green, today. And I also joined the Amanda Fritz fan club here in testify. I think I'm going to focus on number 30, the one on West End trees. I had 28 Jefferson Street and 30 as kind of a combined to say that at the very least for this action, Amanda's amendment is identify tree preservation and planting opportunities and implementation strategies along I-205, including vine coverage and canyon walls. I'm afraid that the city of Portland doesn't really have that much jurisdiction just along I-405, but there are places with, so my tweaking of that amendment is and adjoining and connecting streets for at least two blocks in, meaning like Jefferson and Columbia streets, for example, and certainly 13th, but also 12th Avenue and 11th Avenue and all. There are places on these streets that are totally devoid of street trees. Many of them are very low-income buildings. They're not necessarily subsidized buildings. They're not all, you know, either Housing Authority or HUD buildings, but they are. They have all low-income people. Anyways, I think that's a very important amendment there, and adjoining and connecting streets for at least two blocks in. The other thing that Amanda said in number 30 was include central citywide actions in specific districts where they are relevant, and I couldn't agree more. And in fact, one amendment that I environmental action I was able to get into both Goose Hollow and the Pearl District by going to those neighborhoods early on and testifying for the need for us to have habitat and connected habitat and all, got into their environmental actions, but not into my own neighborhood. And that was one on strategically install native vegetation and trees within the public open spaces, including the South Park blocks and streetscapes along the missing park blocks, to achieve a north-south wildlife corridor. Those are probably two of my most important. I also had some comments on the West End surface parking lots that Amanda, or at least staff, did not support, but Amanda's recommendation was continuing to explore incentives for discontinuing the development and use of surface parking lots. I suggest adding not only incentives but disincentives, and I had already submitted to the Strategic Advisory Committee and all an idea for a split rate taxation where we tax those parking lots at their development potential, not just, you know, like right now the parking lot catty-cornered from the Indigo 12 West pays 1/43 less in taxes than than 12 West does, and this seems like we're really incentivizing the wrong thing to let parking lots off with such low taxation rates. So, anyway, that was another part of my suggested contributions that did not get in. In fact, no representative whatsoever on the Strategic Advisory Committee for the West Quad Plan.
Okay. Thank you.
Mary, thank you very much for all of your amendments, many of which I tried to get incorporated, and I appreciate that you have done a lot of work to make this plan better. I wanted to note that an incentive could be the avoidance of punishment as well as something good came to happen.
Okay. All right.
Thank you. Okay. Well, I want to get staff back up to help us walk through our action on the amendments, but also I'd actually love to ask a question about that last testimony, which is both really to you, Commissioner Fritz, and to staff, and that is, why are we being street-specific on numbers 28 and 30, now that she's called that to our attention? 28 talks about Jefferson Street with green infrastructure, and 30 talks about along I-405. I guess that's not quite as street-specific, in terms of retrofitting parts of the West Quadrant with street trees that don't yet have them. I like that idea, but so why are we focusing particularly on those two fronts?
Well, so my understanding was that's covered in the overall policies. So okay. This 28 was just amending a proposed policy to get the language correct, and because the actual policy is on the Jefferson Main Street rather than particularly on the...
So it's just including green infrastructure as part of what we're going to try to do in the Jefferson Main Street.
Correct.
Okay.
And not just limiting it to stormwater facilities, which doesn't sound nearly as nice as green infrastructure.
Correct.
And then 405 was a modification of a suggestion that Mary had made to try to recognize that there are some things that we could do with the freeway, and there's particular challenges with the freeway in various places, and what could we do to mitigate that?
Okay.
So we have street tree planting policies in the central citywide, but this we left in because of the 405 and that particular impact on these neighborhoods.
Okay, got it. All right. Other questions for staff?
I have some, Mayor. Thank you. Joe, I'll try to do this in order. Can we start with Amendment 7? So there's a notation under BPS recommendation. The staff suggests listing the number of sites in the performance target rather than the policy language. And I'm prepared to agree with that, provided that we have some clarity that there will be somewhere between 5 and 7 sites that will be identified somewhere in the process, and have you confirmed that that's the intent?
I'll turn it over to Mindy.
Sure. So we've identified 7 opportunity sites, which was the map that we had up before. We could flip back to it. And we're recommending that the target for 2035 to be to restore at least 5 of those 7.
At least 5?
At least 5.
And those sites will specifically be identified and listed in what document?
They're in Appendix C of the plan, which specifies the methodology for the enhancement and restoration strategy, and the 7 sites are identified, the opportunity sites.
Okay, so they're baked into what we have.
Yes, they're baked into what we have.
And the commitment is at least 5.
And what
we've heard from some testimony is shooting for between 5 and 7.
Yeah, and we landed on 5 because we haven't done a feasibility study on these, and we don't know if we'll be able to do restoration at all 7 of the sites. So we think that it's reasonable to put 5 down as the target and then get into some feasibility work.
I believe you said at least 5.
At least 5, okay. Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'd like to move to 18-22-24. I just want to, without beating a dead horse, Joe, I do think this park is a regional park. It has significance to the whole community. But the concern I have from the commissioner in charge has to do with timing and funding. And also the value of doing a planning process if there aren't resources to implement it. So is that a fair characterization?
Yes, of what Commissioner Fritz is saying, Mia. Yes.
And it is, when this issue has come up in the past about action items and priorities and stuff, what we're essentially saying as a council, were we to adopt those, that it would be a council priority to find a way to fund them. Council setting a timeline, and so it'd be a council responsibility for determining a method for funding the study. I mean, I think I'm stating it rhetorically, but I just want you to affirm that, mm-hmm. if that's the council decision.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, there's an implementation of the waterfront park plan sort of notion here. That's we sort of need an implementation plan as well as, in this particular recommendation and update, both of those have this follow-up from City Council to empower that to happen. It is implied in that.
Well, right. It's always been implied. Only in the East Portland Action Plan have we ever gone back and tracked and checked things off. So we need to be having a citywide discussion, because I think everybody who testified today and most people that I've heard from have been folks who live or work downtown or have development interests. I would be very interested to hear from the East Portland Action Plan folks if they support dedicating money and money both for the planning process and for implementation of improvements at Waterfront Park over any other use that might be that we might be able to put that money to.
Yeah, but there's a problem with that approach, Commissioner, because I happen to support both. I happen to applaud your equity agenda and have supported all the funding requests you've made, because I think we should do it. But I don't think we should at the same time not proceed with investing in parks that serve a regional function. I think we have to do both. And I think I don't think asking East Portland Action Plan to prioritize either is fair to them. I think we should double our investment in East Portland, and you are doing that with SDCs and asks and everything else. But this, we also have things called regional parks. It would be like saying we're not going to make any marginal investments in Forest Park because of its geography. I would say, as your ally in this, let's find the resources to do both. And I hear your concern that you have prioritized addressing a deficit, and when we're adding of something to your shopping to your list that is not funded and may not happen, I understand there's a conflict. But it would seem to me that the way you resolve that isn't to either degrade your equity agenda or not proceed with a historic opportunity to upgrade a regional park, but to commit to having the resources to do both.
In a perfect world with all the money that's available, then yes, of course we would do both. But we don't have that. We have Forest Park, whose management plan was done in 1995 before downtown the waterfront park, that also could use another fresh look. We've been presented with this one as an ask in this particular plan, but we're not. We don't have the information to say whether or not this is the priority when you look at all of the parks needs citywide, when you look at all of the regional needs citywide.
Fair point. So I'm going through my questions, and then we'll have a council discussion. Joe, could we go to 43 for a second?
Yes.
What I heard from the testimony is broad support for that portion of the amendment that sets a 100-foot height limit. So I guess that's been resolved in the historic area, but some concerns about the bonus linkage. And could you again walk us through why we'd want to have the bonus linked to something more than preservation of affordable housing?
So this one's a little confusing because of the way we've divided it up here. But there's two areas in the Pearl District where we're talking about height increases. There's the area that sort of surrounds the 13th Avenue Historic District. Now I called it the South Pearl, Mid Pearl is apt as well. And the notion there is greater heights, but only accessible through benefit to historic or smaller properties in the Pearl to preserve those. City Council's also made it clear by Action A in the new list that the provision of affordable housing needs to be considered in that whole package, and we're going to bring that whole package back. So that's one sort of situation. The community has supported, or parts of the community, the Pearl District Neighborhood Association supports that tactic applied here, especially focusing on the historic and character buildings. The waterfront is the one place where we've put forth the idea of additional height in return for a bigger or enhanced greenway. And, the way this evolved in the plan was that's always been, because it's such a specific thing that you would want to accomplish at that site, it was seen as a kind of an obvious trade-off to maybe create some flexibility to maybe get more. It's a tactic that a version of which we've used in South Waterfront. So that's how that got defined separately. By the time, honestly, at the point we're at now, our thinking about all of these bonuses is somewhat altered in that we have a clearer sense of priorities. That's what your Amendment A gave us. But the principle that was introduced in this plan and that we're carrying through is still there, that where we're talking about additional height or additional floor area ratio, it's always coming as a bonus. The idea of that not getting some public benefit to earn it is not something that the Planning and Sustainability Commission was supportive of. So every time we talk about height or FAR increases, that's a situation where we should find the right way to extract some value and return to that for a public benefit. A bonus is what I'm really talking about. On the Pearl waterfront is the only place where we said we particularly are interested in the greenway because really the staff and the stakeholder advisory committee saw that as something that our experience has been is hard to get and is critically important for the site, and it's a limited area.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions for staff?
So on Amendment 49, just want to clarify, Tracy Prince testified about the views from the Vista Bridge and Washington Park. And is that Are you intending to include that in the update to the scenic plan inventory?
Absolutely, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Okay, just getting nods from
yes.
the support team there. Other questions? Okay, so now I think we need to walk through council votes on the packages as we have put them in front of us. So the first package is the consent package of all of the items that we did not separately address in these proposal groups.
Correct.
And that were not checked with a check mark for discuss. So are we clear on what that package is? And we've had a little bit of testimony about a couple of them, but no recommendations about changes in them. So,
correct. Well, I think, is there a clarification?
Is there a clarification on any of those?
I think staff and I just discussed it, so I think you're clear with where we are. I don't think we need it.
Yep. So, correct.
Okay. Then, unless.
And how many, just what's the total number of amendments in package A?
I can probably clarify. So, there were 72.
Put your microphone on. I think your microphone. Yeah.
72 primary amendments, and then there were the supplementals. So of those 72, they're all before you in one way or another, except for 40, 45, and 46. So.
All right. So, but in this in the consent package A, how many amendments are there?
Well, that includes everything in those first 72 except 40, 45, 46, except 7 through 11, except 18, 22, 24, 57, and 43.
66,
and
right?
69. And 69, which was withdrawn or never moved.
So it, with when just quick with the math, it's 66 are in the consent package.
That's helpful.
Okay. Everyone comfortable with taking a roll call vote on those? So on the adoption of those amendments, roll call, please.
Fritz?
I'm absolutely disgusted with this entire hearing. I think it was unfortunate to put amendments out that people thought they were going to be able to testify on and were not able to. I've always said that there's no purpose in having a public hearing if you're not going to listen to what the public said. So perhaps the majority of council was being honest and that they had already made up their minds on those without hearing from folks. But still, that did not feel good. What we are doing is spot zoning to benefit particular developers in particular places, many of whom the particular developers being allied with members of the council. And we are ruining the vista that we now have on our precious waterfront park. So just as previous councils were lauded for taking away the parking facility, which is now Pioneer Courthouse Square, this council is going to be remembered for putting potentially two 250-foot stocks in the middle of a row of historic 75-foot height limits, and also allowing the Met Club that got denied on the Block 7, allowing them to do by right on a different block without really any public input on that, and that is appalling to me. We are ignoring our current comprehensive plan policy to maintain housing potential, which is policy 4.8. We're supposed to act in accordance with the comprehensive plan until we change it. By not changing it first and not even having that proposed change called out, we're being dishonest, and I'm appalled. No.
Fish.
Well, first of all, I want to thank everyone who's taken time over these hearings to testify and to share their views with the council. I want to especially recognize all the citizens who signed up for the various committees that reviewed this, starting with the advisory committee. And obviously, our friends at Planning and Sustainability Commission, and now it comes to us after one of the most exhaustive public processes that I can think of. I think we can have differences of opinion on this body without questioning people's motives or denigrating people who's served in a volunteer capacity. And I regret that there has been some, in the testimony, some people have chosen to raise claims about the stakeholder committee and the way they approach their work. One of the roles that we play here that's very important is we play a referee role and a substantive role. And we take very seriously claims that are raised from any source that somehow a process is not fair or is not structured appropriately. And I think we get into a very, very bad habit in our city and in our civic debate where, because of a fundamental difference of opinion on a policy matter, we make ad hominem comments about people that were asked in the process to provide their best guidance. And I would suggest to you that if we continue down that path in our debate, we will start looking indistinguishable from our friends in Washington, D.C. And I sincerely hope that we continue to hold a higher standard in this city of civic debate where we do not question people's motives and we do not make wild claims about people's intentions, that we engage differences and we do them honestly and fairly, and then we cast our votes and we move forward. And I regret that there is this this cloud that has now been placed over this process, because I think it obscures a tremendous amount of good work. And so I'll begin by not just thanking the public that has weighed in, but I want to thank the staff that has worked tirelessly. I do not remember a more complicated process, and I actually thought that even with really a small avalanche of amendments brought in a fairly tight time frame, staff did a remarkable job making sure that council had the information, had their particular view about each item, and further carved out the time to brief us and make sure that you could be responsive to our concerns. And we could not ask anything more of our team, and so I want to really extend my deep thanks to the Planning Bureau and its staff and everyone who worked on this, and in particular to Joe, because Joe often gets the brunt of some of the closed-door discussions where we're kicking around ideas. And I know that my understanding of these things has always gotten sharper because of that that give and take. So I thank you about that. And to the larger process question, I also don't remember a time when so many amendments that made so many important substantive improvements to a plan were adopted with so little controversy. And I guess it's a cup half full, cup half empty, but we've done a substantial amount of work, and it is largely responsive to the tremendously compelling testimony we received in our first hearing on this. And I thank my colleague, Commissioner Fritz, in particular, for distilling a lot of the concerns people had around environmental issues and tree code and zoning issues and placing those before us. You know, we all have a stake in what our city is going to look like, and we all take pride in our city. And I would certainly not do anything today which I thought was going to take away from the continued enhancement of what I think is the most livable city in America. And so this is not the final word on the West Quad plan or the comp plan. And we'll come back and refine it if we got something wrong, and we'll continue to get it right. But I'm proud of the process that I've witnessed in this matter. And today I'm pleased to cast my vote as aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I particularly appreciate the work that's been conducted by the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, the Portland Housing Bureau, and I think virtually all of the offices around here about the importance of narrowing our bonuses down to, you know, if I had my druthers, it'd be simply affordable housing, but I understand affordable housing, historic preservation are also very important, seismic issues as well. But we really need to take the bold steps, and I appreciate my concern had always been that we're going to do that too late. And I think we're really getting ahead of the curve now. I mean, we're doing it in the West Quad plan with good language in here. And I hope we'll be doing it also in the comp plan when we get to that date, because it's very important. And I think that, you know, some people may misconstrue our support for height in the city. There's two issues around height, I guess I'd like to say. Is one, I don't consider height to be vertical sprawl. You know, I consider height, particularly in the West Quadrant, to be what defines a city. A skyline defines a city, and there's nothing to be ashamed about a skyline. And secondly, it is because I want to see that height result in additional affordable housing, affordable to people, and people can live and work in our downtown. So these are issues why I come to the support of these amendments, or I should say maybe in opposition to some of the amendments that were put forward. But yeah, I'm not going to be shy or defensive about it at all. I feel great about this. This is what makes this city a great city. Aye.
Novick?
I'm continually amazed and impressed by how many people in this city devote countless unpaid hours looking at issues like this, and it makes me very proud.